It's Friday, April 5th, 2024, and this is the Arkansas Times Week in Review. Thanks for joining us. On today's episode, we're going all out for the solar eclipse with a roundtable discussion of sorts with the Arkansas Times stable of reporters. We're also catching up on the latest with the lawsuit regarding Arkansas Learns. But first, managing editor Benjamin Hardy and city reporter Mary Hennigan discuss actions taken this week by the Little Rock Board of Directors, who voted on a range of issues, including the expansion of the Little Rock recycling program. And they also discussed the decision to award the late Brian Malinowski a $24,000 bonus.
You talked to us a few weeks ago about the raid and by the ATF and fatal shooting of the former airport executive of Little Rock Airport, Brian Malinowski, at his home in West Little Rock. Of course, you know, this is a story that sort of took up our whole week, the week that it happened, because it was just such a unexpected and bizarre, strange piece of news.
Yeah.
And it's been kind of out of the news since then. But this week you were at the airport commission and Malinowski came up again. He died from his injuries as a result of the shooting during that raid a couple days later. And then documents that were unsealed after his death alleged that he was selling guns illegally. And that was sort of the reason why the ATF was raiding his home. But when the airport commission met this week, what did they do?
Yeah, so it was their first meeting since Malinowski's death, and the meeting had to be rescheduled because of what happened that week. And the meeting started with the chair of the commission, Bill Walker, opened with a few moments of silence. That was pretty expected. Then the six members headed directly into an executive session, and they stayed there for about 45 minutes. When they came back, they made three votes, and the first of which was to give Malinowski a bonus of $24,000. So like we said, Malinowski has died, and I'll return to that. Okay. Next, they voted to conduct a search for the next executive director, and they also voted to give a 7% salary raise to the interim director, who is Tom Clark. And Clark served as Malinowski's assistant director, but has taken over the role in the meantime, and his salary is about $237,000. So the bonus that they gave Malinowski, like I said, is for $24,000. Commissioner Patrick Schick made the motion. He said that Malinowski had a very productive year in getting funding for the airport, and giving a bonus to a successful airport executive is standard practice. Schick mentioned a $4 million grant for a new canopy in the passenger loading zone for the airport, and also the Dassault Falcon Jet lease expansion.
Okay.
So that money, the $24,000, it's kind of confusing. They didn't mention where it was going to go during the meeting, so I asked later.
Yeah.
And they said that it would go to his estate.
Got it.
And they left it there.
Yeah. And we know that he's survived by a wife, correct? I don't think we've heard about any children.
I do not think they have children. He does, we know, he has a brother. And I'm not sure of any other surviving family members. We just know the wife and the brother for certain.
Okay, so that money will go to his estate. And then did they say anything at all about the circumstances of his death, about the ATF raid or anything?
So later in the meeting, Chairperson Walker shared some kind words about Malinowski's leadership, but no one at any point made any mention of the raid or any of the allegations against him. So still mostly silence from the airport, and this is something that we'll keep on seeing if something happens.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Somebody was talking in the office about, like, whatever happened to that story with Malinowski? Like, why aren't you guys reporting on it more? I understand that, you know, why people feel that way, but we don't know as anything, really.
Yeah, you know, we're asking questions, but no one's answering them.
We got the, you know, unsealed affidavit the week that this all happened, and then, you know, we still have questions as well about, like, what was the... How did the raid itself happen? You know, this was like at 6 a.m. How did the agents announce themselves when they entered the home? Did they knock and then enter? Like, we don't really know about how it all unfolded. But, you know, we're waiting to see. Is there still an investigation ongoing?
As far as I know, Arkansas State Police is still investigating it. And this is something that could last a while. There's no timeline that I've heard of. To when we may get more answers about what happened during the raid.
Got it. So also at the city level, you have some news about recycling.
I do. So recycling is something that I think is really exciting. And this week, the Little Rock Board of Directors approved a new contract with Waste Management that includes glass. There's also a new plastic material, like a clamshell thing that's to-go containers or whatever your fruit comes in. So Little Rock used to recycle glass, and it stopped a few years ago because it was dangerous for the workers. At the waste management facility, they are hand-pulling the glass, but now they have access to new glass equipment. The waste management has a warehouse out at the port of Little Rock that I toured at the end of last year. Hmm. It's called the MRF, which stands for Material Recovery Facility. And everyone's stuff from their recycle bins gets put on the floor of this giant warehouse. Uh-huh. And then a big old thing with a grabber thing puts it on a conveyor belt. These are all official terms.
Sure, obviously. The grabber thing.
Yeah. All the paper and the cardboard and the cans and stuff go through several conveyor belts, and then some of them get shot off into the sky into a different conveyor belt, and some of them fall below. And they go in many different ways, using uh-huh. magnets and vacuums and air pressurizers, lots of innovative technology. And then they get turned into bales for sale for reuse. So the new glass material is going to be one of those new innovative technologies. And there's going to be one part of it where it breaks down the glass using metal disc grinders, and then also a vacuum technology that will put the pure glass down below and then send plastics and papers onward into their own spot.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, I've read before about, I mean, I don't think Little Rock's alone in sort of scaling back the materials so that they can recycle. There's various reasons why it's just not cost effective for cities to recycle materials that they used to. And so it's exciting that we're, you know, making a step back in the other direction. There's going to be a little bit of a cost increase. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So this contract was put in place for like immediately. So the rate increase is now. Uh-huh. It'll go from about $5.50 up to $5.99.
Okay.
And then after that, for the next 3 years, there will be about a 30% increase each year.
So not a huge new bill.
No, it should be okay.
And so does this mean that glass recycling is back immediately or what?
Yep. Go ahead and throw your glass on in your recycling bin and then it'll get processed. Wow. And they're going to keep it local, give it to or sell it to companies in central Arkansas.
Okay, great. So also, you mentioned the, you know, waste management facilities out at the Port of Little Rock, and there's some other big news at the port this week. The board approved a $4 million expansion of land for the like industrial park associated with the port to buy up new territory. How much land does that include and why are they doing it?
Yeah, so it's a lot of land. It's going to be 867 acres when it's all said and done. And the cost comes out to about $4.3 million. That's going to be paid for using voter-approved bond funds, okay, specifically for the Port of Little Rock. The seller was a family estate. So out at the Port of Little Rock, there's a lot of land for the port's industrial park, about 5,000 acres before this purchase was made. Companies like Amazon, Waste Management, Boyd Metals, and Hormel Foods are set up there. There's also more companies expected soon. We talked before on the podcast about the Norwegian company Elopak that's coming, and they uh-huh. make little milk cartons and other drink cartons. So they're coming as well. Some of the land of the 867 acres are going to be ready for development. Companies can come on down and set up shop pretty soon. I talked with Brian Day, the executive director at the port, and he said that within 6 to 9 months, we could have some new companies lined up there. Other parts of the land are not ready for development, and they may never be developed because they have wetlands on them. Hmm. So this is part of an environmental protection plan, kind of, that the uh-huh. city has, where they want to buy up the land to preserve the land. It's also beneficial for companies who remove a wetland in an area. Mm-hmm. When you do that, you have to bring back some more wetland. And so when the city has this land available already, they don't have to go and find other sources of that.
Yeah, I was unaware of that until you were reporting on this week about sort of the existence of this whole sort of credit swap program. Like if a company drains wetland for development purposes, they're supposed to sort of offset that with protecting other land.
Yeah, right? It's a good preservation method. And the new parcels of land will also be beneficial for companies that want smaller sections of land, like 50 acres or 100 acres, as opposed to like 1,000 acre land.
One last question. Eclipse Day is coming up. What are your plans on Monday?
Eclipse Day is Monday. I am headed to the northern part of the state, north central Arkansas, where my partner's family lives on a farm on top of a hill. So we're going to have
pretty much perfect.
A great view of the sky, hopefully if it's not too cloudy. And I'll be surrounded by cows and pigs and stuff, okay, and I'm going to see what they do.
Okay. Yeah, Stephanie Smittle here in the office was looking into the question of like what animals do during the eclipse. She interviewed somebody at the zoo a few weeks ago. And we like all thought there was going to be some amazing weird answers. And for the most part, I was like, well, they get kind of sleepy sometimes. You know?
I'm not expecting much, yeah, but I'm hopeful.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Benji.
Jenny Roberts reported on Monday, March 25th, that five plaintiffs, Central High School teacher Ruthie Walls, parent Jennifer Reynolds, student Sadie Bell Reynolds, parent Sandra Williams Davis, and student Giselle Davis, filed a lawsuit against Governor Sanders and the Arkansas Department of Education Secretary Jacob Olivia. The plaintiffs allege that a portion of the Arkansas Learns Act, Section 16, contains a provision that is unconstitutional. Section 16 is a portion of the law that prohibits, quote, indoctrination, end quote. Editor-in-Chief Austin Gelder and Benjamin Hardy discussed the lawsuit.
So, Benji, on March 25th, a new federal lawsuit was filed, and that is targeting Arkansas Learns. And my understanding is that it's about a specific piece of it. So can you tell me who the plaintiffs are and what they are wanting to do?
Yeah, so this was a press conference. It was announced at a press conference near Central High. I think they're going to do it out in front of the high school, and it got rained out, had to move across the street. But that's significant because it sort of, I think, is relying on the historical significance of Central High and the civil rights struggle. And also, the plaintiffs are all associated with the school. There's two students and two parents, and then a high school history teacher there, Ruthie Walls, who taught a class on AP African American Studies, which is kind of at the heart of this dispute. So the plaintiffs are asking a federal court to issue an injunction blocking this section of Learns. The section concerns so-called indoctrination, prohibits critical race theory and the use of quote-unquote indoctrination in classes in Arkansas classrooms. Now, I mean, what that means, very much unclear under the law, but it has been cited by the state most prominently in a dispute over this AP African American Studies course. And that's something that you covered last year, Austin, when it was happening. If you could give us like maybe a recap of that.
Sure. That was a wild ride. So the Friday before the 2023-2024 school year started, teachers were in their classrooms, I guess, putting up the last on the bulletin boards and getting the desks ready. Word went out that the AP African American Studies classes that were on tap in, I think, six schools?
Yeah,
in
six high schools, I think, around the state.
Would not be recognized for credit by the state. That class had been pioneered already at Central High for a year and was ready to spread. But at the last minute, the Department of Education kind of threw a grenade into those plans. Mayhem ensued. There was back and forth on whether the schools would be allowed to teach the course, whether they would get credit at all. Ultimately, all the schools continued to offer the class, but there was a lot of fighting about it, and it was very extremely politicized. Definitely the Department of Education insinuated that this was, you know, there was a danger that indoctrination was embedded in this class.
One way to kind of read the statement from them at the time was like, teachers that are teaching this could be violating the law.
Right. There was some concern for a minute that teachers could be criminally in trouble. Luckily, that things seem to have gone well. I guess those classes are probably preparing for their AP exams now.
Sure,
of course, the state, which covers AP exam costs for every other class, said they will not do that this time. Every school district stood up and said, "Well, we'll cover those costs." So that was kind of good to see.
Bottom line, the state did not actually, they did not stop schools from teaching the class this past school year.
That's correct. I would also say that they certainly continue to put a chilling effect on efforts to make sure that our students have access to an eclectic education.
This is the second year that the class is in a pilot program. So next year, how many high schools around the state will embrace this class? We don't know yet.
We don't know yet, but next year it will be on the books solidly like every other AP class. This year, while it's second year pilot, it's already being accepted for credit in a lot of places, including the U of A. So this, I guess, is one of the challenges. Like, while there was a lot of back and forth and confusion, and ultimately the class was allowed to go forward, like I said, I think there's probably a chilling effect. There's a huge lack of clarity on what indoctrination even means.
Right.
So this lawsuit is interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, to go back to your earlier question about what exactly they're asking for here, or what exactly they're alleging here, they cite several reasons. Plaintiffs, by the way, are being represented by Mike Lowe, who's a civil rights attorney out of Chicago, but who's kind of made a name for himself in Little Rock, suing the Little Rock Police Department and others, often around, you know, alleged racial discrimination. So they say on the state's actions, and this part of Learns discriminates on the basis of race. They say it also violates the First Amendment by regulating free speech in the classroom. You know, it's saying what teachers can and can't say. And they say that it violates the 14th Amendment of the Constitution by creating these two different classes along racial lines. I mean, it's treating, they say, AP African American Studies different than other AP Social Studies classes that might cover the same material. I think it's all pretty novel, I think, as far as, like, you know, a state trying to do this kind of thing, at least recently. And so, I mean, I have no idea how the courts will treat this kind of question, but it seems like...
I agree. I have no idea how the courts are going to treat this question. So there are some concerns about the judge who's been assigned the case. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. So the case was originally assigned to federal judge Christine Baker in the Eastern District of Arkansas. She recused the day afterwards, and we are not entirely sure why she recused. But it was then reassigned to Judge Lee Rudofsky, who is a very different sort of judge. He's a Federalist Society member. He was appointed by President Trump in 2019. He formerly worked under former Attorney General Leslie Rutledge at the as Solicitor General, and has just kind of made a name for himself as a conservative-leaning judge. He made a ruling that, I mean, could have potentially national impact in 2022 involving the Voting Rights Act, in which he sort of questioned the whole premise that private parties can bring cases under the Voting Rights Act. And, you know, if that's upheld, as it was upheld by the Eighth Circuit, if it's upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, it could have really profound consequences for voting rights in the U.S. He's seen as pretty conservative. Then on Friday of last week, he posted a statement on PACER, the federal court's website, which noted that he was himself planning to apply for a school voucher under Learns, or his family is planning to apply for a voucher, I should say, but he would not be recusing from the case. And he said that, you know, he didn't feel that warranted a recusal, that he would be, the fact that he was applying for a voucher. He didn't really say this, but I gather that, you know, it's, I mean, he's saying this is a totally different section of the law. The lawsuit's primarily about this indoctrination section and, you know, not about the voucher program. But lawyers in the case, you know, have a window of time to ask the judge to recuse. You know, we'll see if they do so. I think, you know, the lawyers in this lawsuit said they were still weighing their options when we talked to them earlier this week. And Austin, do you have any plans for the eclipse?
Well, I plan to take my boys out in the yard and put on our little glasses and look up. I think I'm kind of a contrarian about it because everyone is freaking out so much that I kind of feel like we've just kind of set ourselves up for a huge disappointment. And there's so much pressure to, like, have a magical eclipse experience that I think I might just throw in the towel, have some glasses ready, we'll go outside. That's it.
Totally. Yeah. Very sympathetic position.
Finally today, Benjamin Hardy sat down with reporters Rhett Brinkley, Daniel Greer, and Stephanie Smittle to cover every conceivable angle of the upcoming April 8th eclipse.
So April 8th, Monday coming up, is the total solar eclipse. We've been hearing about it for weeks, months, years sometimes. Maybe it seems like, I mean, maybe a little bit too much. But we are, like many people in the state, eagerly anticipating it. And we've been covering it from a few different angles. I am joined here by several of our staffers at the Arkansas Times, including Rhett Brinkley, who's been covering the weather angle. So, Rhett, you talked yesterday with KARK weatherman Todd Yacobian, who you've talked to a number of times in recent months, and you asked about the forecast for Monday. So how are things looking?
Things are looking like they're going to be partly cloudy.
Okay. That's exciting news.
Yeah. You know, Yacobian said they're looking at computer models now that are showing about 54% cloud coverage in Little Rock.
Uh-huh.
And the further south you go, it gets higher, 80%. And El Dorado right now, there's going to be a cold front coming through on Sunday that could bring showers and storms, and they expect that to settle south of Arkansas. The closer to that you are, the more cloud cover and moisture you'll get. You know, in North Arkansas, it'll be a little bit lower with like 43% cloud cover and a mountain home.
So there, that's, yeah, so I mean, could be better, sounds like. Like perfectly clear skies, more likely than not, right?
Right. And one thing Yacobian said is that anything under 60% is actually good for this time of year. Like April's typically the wettest month of the year in Arkansas. He said it's actually pretty good conditions for what time of the year it is.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I remember, I think Matt Campbell here looked up some, you know, previous April 8ths from, and a lot of clouds. You know,
right.
It's a stormy month.
Yeah.
Even so, he said that he's feeling positive about the whole thing. Like, why is that?
He remains optimistic. He said he's that's part of his personality. and he's hopeful. But there could also be breaks in the higher clouds, clouds lower in the atmosphere. Cumulus clouds, those big puffy clouds. He said those could actually dissipate as the eclipse starts and as it starts to get darker and the temperature drops. It typically drops during total solar eclipses between 7 to 10 degrees.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating. So like there's actually atmospheric effects like on the clouds themselves that the shadow of the moon is causing.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's pretty excited just about the weather angles with that. And you know, he said even if it is cloudy, it's still going to be a remarkable event to see, you know, and witness. You know, hopefully the clouds will break a little bit and people will be able to see it.
All right. Well, we'll have an update between now and Monday.
But. Yeah, he said to check in Friday. They expect the forecast to be a little more clear by then.
All right. Thanks a lot. So next up, I'm joined by entertainment and culture and arts editor Daniel Greer. There's a ton of events happening across the area on April 8th. Watch parties, music festivals, all sorts of stuff. We can't list everything of note, but what are some options for people in the Little Rock area?
All right. Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is some programming in Soma that happens sort of all weekend long, starting Friday night with Soma After Dark. It's like a typical market that they do, but it's going to be eclipse themed. There's going to be vendors at Bernice Gardens. And then on Saturday, there's full day of eclipse stuff, including a nighttime parade at 7:30. Then on Monday, there is a watch party that's supposed to have like an astro market of different scientists and science adjacent people who are able to answer questions and give you cool ways of thinking about the eclipse.
What else?
In the River Market area at the First Security Amphitheater, there's going to be music all weekend as well. Saturday, we've got Rodney Block. And then on Sunday, we've got Ward Davis. And then on Monday, we've got The Machine, which is a Pink Floyd cover band.
Okay.
And they are going to stop for like, you know, a few minutes or 15 or 20 minutes when the actual eclipse is happening, but are going to be playing overall during that full chunk of time. And they're supposed to be playing Dark Side of the Moon in its entirety.
Of course.
So sure. Yeah, that should be awesome.
All right. Anything else?
Yeah. AMFA is doing some movie screenings on Sunday. They're showing Fantasia and 2001 A Space Odyssey, which feels kind of thematically appropriate.
Yeah.
And then on the day of the eclipse, MacArthur Park, where AMFA is at, is going to have a watch party with a performance from Ballet Arkansas. Should be cool.
What about outside of Little Rock?
Definitely the sort of the biggest names are going to be at this festival called Ecliptic in Hot Springs that's being run in partnership between Valley of the Vapors Independent Music Festival and Atlas Obscura, that like sort of travel company. And it's a pretty insane lineup there. That festival's, you know, not cheap. It's, you know, it's like a pretty legit festival, so it'll put you back a few $100. But also in Russellville on the day of the eclipse, there's going to be this mass wedding. Last I checked, they had like 289 couples signed up to get married simultaneously.
Okay. Is that during or pre-eclipse?
It's right before the eclipse is the actual ceremony. They're going to have like, you know, a reception afterward. And I think it'd be like pretty interesting as just an observer. Like, you know, I actually think you can still sign up as a couple if you want to make a last minute decision.
I had some friends mention it as a possibility, but I don't think it's going to happen. Okay. Anything else?
There's another music festival at Mulberry Mountain up in Northwest Arkansas. Yeah. I've heard that particular piece of land is especially beautiful.
Okay. Well, let's leave it there. So, Stephanie Smittle, you have been following some of the preparations being made for the influx of visitors this weekend and Monday. What is the state doing to prepare? What are local governments doing? And is it over the top or worthwhile or what?
Yeah, over the top is a big question because estimates have ranged so wildly on the number of visitors that are expected to come into Arkansas, anywhere from 3 million. RDOT's data, the Department of Transportation, says 1.5 million at some points. Other people say, you know, it's going to be much lower than that. At an eclipse preparedness press conference in early March, Governor Sanders said that she thought those estimates were a little bit high. And I think she was right to point out that the weather is really a make or break factor here. So the weather drives everything. She pointed out, I think probably rightly so, that if Texas has great weather and we don't, that's going to shift everything. And we can see that influx happen like right up to the moment. So yeah, it's also, I think, not inconsequential to factor in not only people coming in from out of state, but people from within Arkansas are, of course, going to be traveling within the state to get themselves into the path of totality. So it remains to be seen.
And I think, you know, mostly when they're talking about preparations, we are just talking about traffic, right? Like, is that the biggest thing?
Some of it is traffic, but a lot of it is more along the lines of emergency preparedness. So the Department of Emergency Management, the State Department, has been in talks for over a year about the eclipse, holding operational calls, trying to anticipate transportation, but also traffic management issues, potential fuel shortages. And a lot of this has to do with the idea that if we do have an influx of visitors to the state, they could also bring with them an influx of need for medical attention or, you know, emergency transportation. Sure. So a few things happening along those lines. The Arkansas Trucking Association is limiting oversized and overweight loads traveling through Arkansas over the course of the next several days, working with the Arkansas Highway Police to station officers at key locations along busy routes that will be equipped with emergency gas, medical supplies, food. And then the Department of Emergency Management also has smaller ATVs that are going to be able to navigate more congested areas where their emergency vehicles might not otherwise be able to go. State-managed rest areas and welcome centers are going to be stocked up with extra supplies, first aid kits, that sort of thing. There's a construction holiday, so no lane closures starting Friday, April 5th through Tuesday, April 9th. And then, yeah, various state agencies are just working to accommodate the traffic in other ways. So the Department of Human Services, for example, which has a huge building here in downtown Little Rock, is stationing as many of its employees as possible at home or remotely on the day of the eclipse. It is likely that other state agencies are doing likewise. And along the lines of that medical attention, this also means that local hospitals and emergency rooms are amping up their not only their staffing, but expanding their hours. So St. Vincent, for example, has many clinics in the path of totality. Morrilton, Mount Ida, Hot Springs, all of those will be robustly staffed, they tell us, and are accepting walk-ins in hours that they might not typically accept walk-ins.
Interesting. I mean, as always, yeah, like a lot more than I would have thought going into the preparation.
Yeah, and the conversations have been going for quite some time, kind of behind the scenes. Maumelle is a great example of a city that's invested very heavily in their eclipse preparedness plan. So they have an event called Blackout on the Boulevard, and you know they expect 300,000 visitors to come in for this. They have invested $105,000. Dollars for three electric bikes. One of those has a stretcher on it, so it can physically transport someone in places where like another emergency vehicle might not be able to go. Three AEDs and an ATV to transport anyone in need of emergency care.
AED?
AED.
What is an AED?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Another mystery.
The police department also spent money in Maumelle, $69,000. They got themselves a UTV, so you can Google UTV along with AED, four electric bikes, traffic barricades and cones, helmets, transport racks, lots of new toys for the Maumelle PD.
So, you know, whatever the actual number is, I mean, Mon-Mel is a better site, probably. I mean, in terms of just the duration of totality than Little Rock. And one thing I'm sort of struggling with still is like whether or not to travel outside of the city, like whether to, it's worth it to go farther into the center of the
Right. Because eclipses happen so rarely, we don't have like much of a frame of reference. And so it takes a little bit of, I think, wrapping your head around how the path of totality works. So there's the path of totality, and that's the wide swath that you've seen going along the state, like a big swipe, you know, that spans many miles. And then there's the line of totality. So it is important to note that if you are just outside the path of totality, yeah, you are missing out on the eclipse in a big way, right? Like from inside to outside the path of totality, you're not going to experience the eclipse in the same way. You'll see right. it'll grow slightly darker, but yeah, if you're in the shadow, you're in the shadow.
Yeah.
So you're not gonna miss out on the eclipse as long as you're within that path. But I think for a while I thought that, oh, if I'm closer to the line, the eclipse is, it's darker, or I'm going to experience it in a more intense way. It's not necessarily the case. It's just that if you're on the line, and the closer you are to the line, the longer the duration is.
Got it. Because this is like, yeah, I mean, if you look at the animations of it, you see like a circle that's sort of sweeping across the Earth. And that is, the closer you are to the center of the circle, the longer the time that you have, the further you are to the edge of the circle, you know, you're just spending less time in that circle.
Right.
Right.
You'll spend less time. You'll get a, you know, maybe you'll get 2.5 minutes like we will here in Little Rock, as yep, opposed to 4 minutes like they will in Russellville. But you're still going to see what they're seeing in Russellville. You just will see it for not as long.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's a decision to make on eclipse day, I guess, maybe. Or, well, I mean, probably you should make it beforehand. But for me, I'm probably going to wait until.
While you're making it, I would plug the at ArcTimes Instagram, where we have not only a map of the path of totality, but a list of Arkansas cities with the duration of totality in each of them. So you can decide for yourself whether it's worth it to fight the traffic, take your tent in your car and head to Russellville, Morrilton, Mount Ida, Hot Springs.
So what about you? What are your plans on Monday?
My plans are to be right here in Little Rock and experience a full, I think, what do we get, 2 minutes and 17 seconds of totality. I'll be right here downtown. If it's Monday, so if the coffee drinking habits that I've developed at the Arkansas Times prevail while I'm witnessing the eclipse from a few blocks away, I will have a cup of coffee in my hand, and even though it's going to be 1:30 in the afternoon, and I'll be experiencing the cosmic wonder from over here in MacArthur Park area. So come find me. I have extra glasses.
All right. Thank you, Stephanie.
That's the show for today. Thanks for listening to the Arkansas Times Week in Review. Enjoy the eclipse, and we'll see you next week.